today is Darren Gee, President and Chief Executive Officer. This company is focused on developing liquids-rich gas plays in the deep Alberta Bakken Basin. We had a look at the numbers, and the company doubled production in the last 2 years. And in Q1, net of royalties, Intercom has the company producing some 28,000 BOE net of royalties with about 158 million proved reserves. Interestingly, one of the things that we track is a metric called asset intensity, which, roughly speaking, is a measurement of cash flow required to maintain flat production. And our numbers have the asset intensity for Peyto at 25%, meaning any cash flow deployed in excess of 25% gross production. That's one of the leading leaders amongst the Canadian E&P companies presenting here at the conference. So we're pleased to welcome Peyto Oil and Gas to the Oil and Gas Conference for the first time.
Well, thank you, Jeff, and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Darren Gee. I'm the President and CEO of Peyto, and this is our first time coming to the conference, so excited to be here. Thanks to Intercom for inviting Peyto. Excited to come and tell you all the story of Peyto. I know it's a gripping tale. Hopefully you'll find it all as interesting as I do. Peyto began in 1998 as a junior grassroots company, really just with little family and friends' money, went out into the western central portion of Alberta in the Alberta Deep Basin, put that money to work in the ground, trying to create a return for shareholders. And the success from those first dollars snowballed into about $300 million of investment in the first 5 years, grew production organically from zero to around 13,000 BOEs per day of natural gas and natural gas liquids. Mid-2003, we converted to an energy trust in Canada. There was a lot of energy trust conversions happening at the time. We weren't like many other trusts, though. We were both a bit of a hybrid trust. We had about a 50% payout ratio coming out of the chute, so 50% paid out to shareholders or unit holders, and 50% we were continuing to put back in the ground. And over the next 7.5 years, Peyto invested about $1.5 billion, drilling about 450 gas wells in the Deep Basin, and grew production organically from 13,000 BOEs per day up to the 30,000 BOE per day mark. That's before royalties. At the same time, over that 7.5 year period, the trust distributed out to its unit holders over $1.1 billion in accumulated earnings, so about $10.87 a share. So a very, very lucrative payout during that period. And then at the end of last year, like many other Canadian trusts, we converted back to a corporation, a dividend-paying corporation moving forward, continuing to invest a lot of money in the ground, organically growing production per share and reserves and cash flow per share for shareholders. So that's where we sit today, a little advisory on forward-looking statements. Peyto trades on the Toronto Stock Exchange under the symbol PEY. We've got 133 million shares outstanding, paying a monthly dividend of 6 cents per share per month. Current production sits somewhere between 36 and 37,000 BOEs per day, or 215, 220 million cubic feet equivalent. It's growing quite rapidly, as Jeff alluded to, over the last couple of years. We've been growing production very rapidly. I think probably one of the most rapid growing production bases in Western Canada. Reserves at the end of last year, we had a little over 110 million barrels of proved producing reserves, so a reserve to production ratio using Q4 at the end of last year would put us at about 11-year reserve life, a very long reserve to production ratio. If you add in the undeveloped component of about 150 million barrels, then we'd have a reserve life index, if you will, of around 25 years, one of the longest in the Western Canadian Basin. Net debt at the end of the second quarter, $474 million on bank lines of 6.25, so with a $22 stock price, that puts us at a market cap of about $3 billion, or an enterprise value of about $3.4 billion, which I think is not bad for a little company with 33 full-time employees. I think the Peyto strategy is a bit of a unique one. At the end of the day, we try to be smart businessmen at Peyto. We try to use our technical expertise to go out and find places to put the drill bit to work so that we can generate a return on the capital that we use to do that for our shareholders. And at the end of the day, I think we want to build superior assets, assets that we control, assets that have low costs, assets that have long reserve life to them, assets that have ultimately low risk associated with them, superior assets. And the whole goal at the end of the day, of course, is to give our shareholders the best possible return we can. And we measure that in terms of the return on capital that we can deliver to them, the return on equity that we can deliver to them, and ultimately a rate of return on an investment in PAYDO. And over the last dozen or so years, I think we've done just that, delivering to shareholders the largest rate of return of any Canadian energy company on the TSX, over 95% IRR, which means if you invested $1,000 in PAYDO in 1998, it's worth over $400,000 today. And I think that statement, ladies and gentlemen, alone gives you a sense of the type of success that we've actually enjoyed at PAYDO. And this last few years, we're really having a lot of fun with this new technology, applying these horizontal multi-stage frac wellbore designs to our traditional tight sandstone reservoirs in the Deep Basin, and we're able to grow production at a magnificent rate. Over the last 18 months or so, we've been growing production per share at about a 40% per year rate. And thankfully, the market's been paying attention, and our share price has been performing about the same. Recently, we hit a record and had a little party, 250 BOEs per day per million shares. But production per share growth really doesn't tell you how well we've invested your dollar, the shareholders' dollar. For that, we have to do a rate of return analysis, and we do this religiously every year for our shareholders, and we publish a return analysis on the capital that we've put to work. So, for example, in 2010, we had a capital program of $261 million. That was all the money that we spent, drilling wells, buying land, shooting seismic, laying pipelines, expanding our facilities, all of the capital that the company spent, including any minor acquisitions that we might have done. We don't do a lot of those. That activity during the year generated about $60 million of operating income. So when we got to the end of 2010, we were out of pocket $200 million. What did we get for that? We had 45 net wells drilled with that money. They were producing about 15,000 BOEs per day, so we built this nice little intermediate company in and of itself. The independent engineers would take that production wedge, forecast it forward, applying their price deck and all of the deductions, and they estimated that that asset was worth $400 million PV10. So we'd effectively taken $200 million and turned it into a $400 million asset. That gives us an internal rate of return on that investment of 33%. So I think it was a very good year investing shareholders' money for them. For perspective, if we were to run that same production wedge at, say, 2006 commodity prices, it would be an IRR of about 125%. So here we are at the bottom of the natural gas commodity price cycle, generating 30-some-odd percent returns, and at the top, closer to 125%. So a very good year in 2010 investing shareholders' money. So I want to take a few minutes today just to talk about PAYDO's business strategy and really how unique that is. And then I'll go in and talk a little bit about our asset base and how unique that is, and then I want to finish up talking a little bit about the returns that we've managed to generate for our shareholders and how incredible those really have been. The secret to PAYDO's success is about summed up in the statement that we build it for less than we sell it. And boy, is that rocket science. That comes as a surprise to everyone, I'm sure. But it is, ladies and gentlemen, that simple. Oil and gas doesn't have to be more complicated than that. Can you build it and sell it, build it and produce it out for less than what you're selling it for? And I think in PAYDO's case, we've very consistently been able to build it and produce it for less than we're selling it. And I'm talking all the costs here. So the cost to build the new producing barrel, so proved producing FD&A costs, not including any additional undeveloped that might be coming down the pipe. The costs for G&A, the cost for interest, the cost for bonus employees, the cost for production taxes and royalties, and the operating costs, including transportation for the commodity. When you add it all up, what are you selling it for compared to all of your costs? And PAYDO's been able to consistently generate about a 40% operating margin throughout the commodity price cycle, which I think is very important. Whether we're enjoying a $12 gas price or a $2 gas price, our cost control allows us to consistently generate this level of profitability. And this is a rare thing in the industry. When I look across the industry, I don't see too many other companies able to generate this level of profitability on a consistent basis. One of the few might be Ultra Petroleum here in the U.S. is the only sort of peer that we've been able to find at this level of profitability. And I think, ladies and gentlemen, part of the reason we've been able to do that is because we're very disciplined with the capital that we're putting to work. We recognize that you can't be investing at full bore all the time. the environment isn't always right. Sometimes service costs are too high for us to generate a good return on the types of opportunities that we're chasing today. So we have to pick our target. And I think there's no more evidence that I can show you than in a period of sort of 2005, 2006, when we saw the cost to build a new producing barrel escalate out of control. Commodity prices, both oil and gas, were at record highs. Industry activity was at record highs, and we saw the cost to build new production get out of control and away from us, which meant our returns were being eroded. We had very good commodity prices at the time. What did we do? We stepped on the brake. We shut down our capital programs. We went from a $360 million capital program in 2005 to $122 million in 2007. So we shut down the capital programs, waited for things to cool off, waited for the costs to come down so that we could generate the types of returns we knew we could with these types of assets. Now we're back to better capital efficiency, and again, we've got our foot firmly on the gas, pardon the pun, and we're building our assets and our production aggressively again. So this capital efficiency metric that I'm talking about here, this yellow line, in the early days of PETA, we were doing it with vertical wells consistently in and around that sort of 25,000 per flowing BOE mark. And how we measure that is that December 31st of every year, we say, how much capital did we spend in the year, and what was the wedge of production that we built with that capital? And we just take that ratio. And I agree that it is a terrible measure of profitability. It doesn't tell us what kind of returns we're generating, but for the same type of asset built at the same pace every year, it does give us a bit of an indication early on whether or not we're generating good returns. And now we've been able to get down below that 20,000 per flowing BOE, and we're adding production very aggressively right now and generating very strong returns for shareholders. One of the other things that's unique about PETA's business strategy really is our approach to land. And you've probably heard the term shoot, ready, aim, referred to other companies that go out and buy large tracts of undeveloped land, and then they figure out which parts of the undeveloped land is prospective. But the problem is that they've invested so much money in all the undeveloped land that the stuff that isn't prospective drags them down. At PETA, we take a bit of an opposite approach. We go out with all of our geotechnical skills. We shoot seismic over land we don't own. We evaluate all of the rock through cuttings analysis. We look at all the drilling reports. We look at all the completion reports. We look at all the production data. And we figure out where the sweet spots in the plays are. And then we just go buy that land, because we don't want to carry all that other undeveloped land that has no real potential associated with it. So as a result, we have a very small amount of undeveloped land relative to the size of the company that we have. But when you do a ratio of our undeveloped reserves that are recognized to the undeveloped land, it's 10 times that of our industry average. And that's because we've only bought those little drilling islands. And that's important to understand about the strategy that we employ at PETA. And really, a little bit of land in the right area goes a long way. So if you take our deep basin land position of about 417 net sections, for instance, and you deconstruct it by multiple layers of producing formation below, all of a sudden the land base gets very big. And then, by contrast, if you were to, say, add up all the production that we've produced over the last dozen years, 0.4 TCF of production, all of the developed reserves that we've developed, and all the undeveloped reserves recognized on the books that we're going to develop, that's over 2 TCF of recoverable resource, recoverable reserves. That fits in just 177 net sections in the deep basin. So really, it's not about how much land you control. It's about whether or not you control the right land. And I think at PETA, we've been able to amass the right drilling islands in the deep basin. Of course, we haven't been using this horizontal technology for very long, and arguably we were very good at drilling vertical wells up until the time we started to use some horizontal wells to develop these resources. We're getting better at it. There's no question that since the fall of 2009, when we started drilling horizontal wells, we've been getting better at it. So we've lopped about 30% off the drill times. Spud to rig release times on these horizontal wells have dropped from an average of 35 days down to about 25 days, which is good because we're starting to see a little bit of cost inflation out there in the industry, so we're counteracting any inflation we've seen with efficiency gains on the drilling side. So I want to talk a little bit about our asset base. It is quite unique when you compare it to a lot of other producers. We're 100% focused in the deep basin. And so all of our asset base fits in this little box. It's about 150 miles by diagonal. We've got over 700 producing zones, 500% owned and operated gas plants in the area with capacity up to about 285 million a day. We operate 99% of our production. And 98% of our production goes through and is processed through our one of our five 100% owned and operated facilities. So effectively, we own and control right from the reservoir to the sales meter. And that's important in understanding how we achieve such an attractive cost structure. We own the infrastructure. And that means that we're not paying someone else processing fees to run through their infrastructure, and it means we're not at the mercy of their runtime when it comes to their infrastructure. A lot of Canadian companies were lamenting the fact that they were shut in the second quarter because third-party processing equipment was down, plants were down, and so they were down. Well, that wasn't the case with Peyto. We control our plants, and I can tell you, they weren't down. One other interesting aspect of Peyto's asset base is it's 100% in the deep basin, in these Cretaceous sandstone reservoirs between 2,000 and 3,000 meters or 6,000 and 10,000 feet. This is a type of trap in the deep basin that's quite unique. It's called a hydrodynamic trap, for lack of a better word. And so it's a little bit reverse of what you would normally think. We've got gas traps in the down dip position, we've got oil up dip of that, and we've got water in the very up dip position. And you say, well, that's all wrong. I poured in the glass in front of me, water floats, sinks to the bottom, the oil floats on top, and all the gas bubbles up through the top. That's how most conventional reservoirs are trapped. The deep basin is trapped opposite of that. And it's because we've got these very fine-grained sandstone reservoirs compacted so tightly together underneath so much overburden pressure that fluids physically can't move through the rock. So as much as the gas wants to migrate into the up-dip position, it can't be displaced there because the fluids can't get into the down-dip position to push it up. And what this means is when you drill a well down into the gas portion of these reservoirs and you start to deplete the pressure, fluids cannot rush in to replace the void as they would in a traditional reservoir. And so you can't get wells watering out. You can't get fluid encroachment happening on your gas reservoir. So this creates a very low-risk recovery environment, and it's something that attracts a lot of people to the deep basin. Now, the flip side to this, of course, is that we've got very low porosity, low permeability reservoirs, and so it takes a long time for us to recover the resources here. We get very long, slow, predictable producing profiles, predictable reserve recovery, but it does take us a long time to get our capital back and get our money out. And so that's where the horizontals have really advanced this play in a big way, because we're getting the production out faster, we're getting our capital out faster, we're generating much higher returns. And so, of course, these multiple stacked formations, you can get up to a dozen sandstone formations bearing up to 80 to 100 BCF a section. A lot of resource in place, and they're aerially extensive. They extend over hundreds of miles. And now instead of using vertical wells that are fracked in each one of these formations, we're using horizontal wells that access and contact a lot more of the reservoir with multi-stage frack along the horizontal. And that has changed the amount of inventory that we at Peyto for sure enjoy dramatically. Our inventory has exploded because we're able to develop much more of these reservoirs economically at these commodity prices, and we can develop them faster, so we can realize a lot more of this inventory quicker and recognize it a lot quicker. You know, at current pace, we're drilling 60 to 65 wells a year. Arguably, we've got 7 or 8 years of inventory out in front of us, and this inventory number is actually expanding faster than we're able to harvest it. So, for example, in 2010, for every well we drilled, we found two more that we could drill and drill them commercially. So we've got to figure out how to harvest this stuff faster. And really, even after these 500 locations have been drilled, our land base is still only 25% developed. So we've got massive resources here in these multiple stacked sandstone formations, and we need to get after developing it. Our asset base is unique from a lot of the standard metrics that we would look at. Reserve life, for instance, proved producing reserve life. Peyto's reserve life close to 11 years, the industry average in Canada closer to 5. I think the U.S. average is around 8. Operating costs. We've got an incredibly low operating cost advantage at Peyto, less than $3 a BOE, including our transportation, compared to an industry average that sits upwards of 11. And we've been able to keep those operating costs low over time. So we've been able to avoid the inflation that has crept into a lot of the industry, really driven, I think, a lot by the rise in oil prices. Everything in the oil patch burns diesel, so not surprising that a rise in oil price would force a rise in operating costs. But we've been able to hold off a lot of that inflation in our operating costs over time. And of course, in Alberta now, with drilling royalty credits below 2,000 meters, a very attractive fiscal regime exists. Typically, a new horizontal well drilled into any reservoir below 2,000 meters deep will enjoy about a 5% maximum royalty for the first 5 years. And really, a lot of these wells at these commodity prices are modeled out to having less than 10% royalties on average over the life of the well. So it's a very attractive regime now. So that was cost to produce it. What about cost to find it and build it? We've been able to put up some top decile type FD&A numbers, proof producing, especially that cash flow generating barrel, which is the most critical one to look at in terms of cost. Last year, $13 a BOE against an industry average of closer to $30. And so when we compare that to what we're selling it for, the netback to the FD&A, which is traditionally called a recycle ratio, we're typically building it for about a third of what we're selling it for, leaving us lots of room for then that production cost and a good wedge of profit for our shareholders. So when you add up all the cost to build it, the FD&A cost, the cost to produce it, the op cost, the royalties, the G&A, the interest, relative to what you're selling it for, what kind of margin are you able to generate? And so here again is that 40% number that I showed you earlier. 2010, PETA was able to generate about a 40% operating margin. With all costs in there, the industry was really struggling to get above water. Where does that come from? Those high margins come from liquids-rich natural gas, so high heat content natural gas with a good component of natural gas liquids, condensates, propane, butane. When you add it up together, we realize about a 40% lift off of dry gas prices, which is why, of course, the industry's abuzz with moving to liquids-rich gas plays like the Eagle Ford. The Deep Basin is one of those. And when you combine that with low cost structure, we run through the math here, and you can see that the 40% heat content and liquid lift that we get more than covers off all of our cash costs. The liquids and the heat alone pay for the royalties, the op costs, the transportation, the interest, G&A. So I just want to spend a couple of seconds talking a little bit about the returns we've been able to deliver for shareholders. I'm a big shareholder of Peyto, and this is where the rubber hits the road. I can talk to you all day long about the IRRs of individual capital programs or wells, but really, as a shareholder, where do the returns meet with me? It's return on capital, it's return on equity. These are the numbers that really tell me whether or not I'm getting anything as a shareholder. Peyto's been able to average over 40% return on equity and 20% return on capital over the last dozen years. These are numbers, I think, that are really important, and in order to get this, you have to be able to generate earnings, real earnings, which seems to be a challenge for a lot of companies in these commodity prices. So I look at the growth in the asset value and the income stream that we've been able to complement that at as the total return package that I'm getting as a shareholder, and that's been growing at a 40% compound annual rate. So for 2011, we've got a very active year. We've recently increased our capital budget up to $375 million as a top end. Definitely all of it going to organic activity, drilling wells, building facilities, laying pipelines, shooting seismic, buying land, all activity that goes into developing this asset, this big deep basin resource play asset, liquids-rich asset that we have, and furthering that forward. The last thing I'll leave you with is an interesting concept with respect to this type. Peyto is a pure play tight gas company, and so we only have one type of decline profile. And what's interesting about that is most people, when they think about oil and gas, would say that as a company gets bigger, it gets harder for them to grow because the law of large numbers just comes into play. If they've got constant declines and they're always having to offset a larger and larger amount of declining production, it gets harder and harder to grow. The interesting thing with tight gas is that as these producing wells age, the declines shallow up significantly. And so as the aggregate amount of production that we've got ages, our corporate decline actually comes down, even when we're growing. So in the early days of PETA, we were growing quite dramatically from 2001 to 2006, and we saw our base declines that we were offsetting every year coming down year over year over year, which meant it was actually getting easier for us to grow as the production base aged. And that phenomenon is unique to this type of decline curve. It's unique to this type of tight gas asset. But we will see that again in the future. So as we grow our production, we're going to see our corporate decline rate come down over time, which means it's just going to get easier for us going forward. So we're pretty excited about the future. I'm going to leave it there. I see I've got 1 minute left. So I'll leave that with you to go through. There's some information on the plays, quarterly track record. We can talk about that in the breakout session. Thank you very much.